If people understood this point of view, I think it'll save many folks a lot of anxiety and agony over Bitcoin.
Part of the reason I opt out at this point is just because I hate all of the systems that enslave us so much that even if it's less convenient for now, I'll opt for it.
When you've been in Bitcoin for long enough, that's when it starts to click for you. If you're gonna buy Bitcoin, it is not something that you look at your account every day, every week, and let it drive your emotions.
When you hold Bitcoin, you own all fiat currencies. Like, you'll have a million of every single one of them, a billion of some other ones. Like, you'll be holding the kingpin of all money, right?
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Greer and Tony with me. Due to some travel conflicts, we're going to schedule this in advance. So this is less news-based, but Tony, you had a very interesting tweet that I think we should start with, and we'll see where this conversation takes us. You said, when you price the world in Bitcoin, the dollar stops looking like money. It looks like a melting ice in hell. And you share this chart, an interesting one. It's one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. And then how many euros, dollars, British pound, and so forth, make up the value of a Bitcoin. And I think you're hitting on a very important point, and one that is challenging for people, for the average person to break free of, like this notion of how many dollars is my Bitcoin worth. Instead, you should be thinking in terms of purchasing power. You should be thinking in terms of one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin, and what is that going to mean for your future? Would you care to elaborate? And then we can just kind of riff on this for a little bit.
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, if people understood, this point of view, I think it'll save many folks a lot of anxiety and agony over Bitcoin, because a lot of people come into this thinking of it as a speculation, as a trade, in order to buy to sell for more dollars or euros or whatever other local currency that they're holding. And this is where a lot of people make mistakes, end up losing funds and what have you. Bitcoin is not a trade. It's not a stock. It's not a speculation. It's money. In fact, it's the most powerful money humanity has ever seen. When people earn a paycheck, like for example, if you earn a paycheck in US dollars, whenever you cash it in, do you compare it to other currencies? Like, do you compare it against the Zimbabwean currency or any other currency? Of course you don't. So why would you do that with Bitcoin, when in fact Bitcoin is money, no different than the US dollar or the euro or any other local currency, with the main exception that it's not government or central bank issued, and it cannot be manipulated, it's fixed in supply, nobody can corrupt it, and what have you. You cannot think of it as anything else, right? And so if people focused on this and started to save in Bitcoin and understood that Bitcoin's power is its appreciation in purchasing power and not how many X dollars or X euros more it's going to give you, then everything changes. Take one Bitcoin. It is the most powerful currency. Look how many of these other shitcoins you get by holding one Bitcoin. Why would you want to hold anything else? People make fun of the Zimbabwean currency when they're holding dollars. They're like, look how much I have. How much I'm worth in Zimbabwe. Well, Bitcoiners are making fun of people holding dollars in the same way. Right?
Tony, I obviously agree with the sentiment. And I think this is an important hurdle for people to overcome mentally. That said, because the dollar is the global unit of account, so to speak, I think for a lot of people, and like, I'd love to hear either of you respond to this, because while I agree with you, I sympathize with people who are like, hey, the only way I can understand what my purchasing power is in any, practical sense is by looking at what it's worth in dollars. I don't really think about it. I don't look at the dollar price. I just don't care, because I know over a long enough time horizon, my purchasing power is going up. But in the meantime, if you've got people who are like trying to buy a particular thing or whatever, they become infatuated with this number go up. What's it worth in dollars? Like, how would you maybe address those people who are saying, hey, I've still got this like fiat denominated life that I live. What do I do with that?
It takes time. I think that's the challenge here. Like, to get to where Tony is, or maybe Michael, where you are, it either takes time or scale. You need to have enough Bitcoin where the dollar price doesn't matter. And I think if somebody's, let's say they bought Bitcoin last year, they bought it at 107, they're hyper-focused on the fact that it's, 89,000 or in the 90s, whenever this episode comes out. And that's the challenge. People are thinking about today. They're thinking about, okay, I bought Bitcoin. I'm not free yet. But when you've been in Bitcoin for long enough, that's when it starts to click for you. And to me, that is table stakes. If you're going to buy Bitcoin, it is not something that you look at your account every day, every week, and let it drive your emotions and how you feel about yourself. It's not an investment the way that you'd invest in a stock or something like that. It is a tool that will set you free. But unless you purchase 10 or 12 or 20 Bitcoin at once, let's say you're a sat stacker and you're buying $100 or $500 every month, it's going to take time until you understand what Bitcoin has done for you. To me, there's no way escaping that unless we go to $1 million overnight or 10 million overnight. And I think that's the part where people are having the most problem. It takes
the thing is, you don't even have to go that high, man. You don't have to go that nowhere near that high initially. If you're in a position to buy 10 or 12 now, you would probably see an immediate change. But that's not necessarily, you know, what most people need to do. Basically, from the way I see it, is that most folks don't know that Bitcoin exists as money. I think it's just as simple as that. They don't know that there's a new form of money out in the universe available to them to use. And so they hear about it, you know, whenever they do, but they only hear about it as a speculation, as, oh yeah, guys, buy this so you can get more of that later on. They don't hear about this as, you know, you don't need to use this instead. And so if you're saving, you don't even need to start with big amounts. Just gradually, continuously add to your savings. Because of its finite supply, this money's purchasing power is so strong that it's going to exponentially go up forever because of that finite supply, as more people understand that this is a new form of money that they can put their savings in. Like, instead of saving it in whatever local worthless paper they're currently doing, they do it in that. And give it enough time, you know, that's when you start seeing that, okay, well, I started with, you know, X, and now, holy shit, this X is worth, you know, a lot more. But if you want that immediate fix, then yes, of course, you know, if you're in a position to go buy 10, 12, 15, or whatever amount of Bitcoin that you have, then, you know, you're going to see that. But for most folks, that's just not going to happen, because most folks are living at the poverty line. I mean, just based on recent stats in the US, if you're making 140K a year, you're considered poor. And most people aren't anywhere near that metric. So it's really about like getting people to change the way they look at this thing and, you know, start adopting it the proper way.
Tony, I think maybe like a way you could explain this, tell me if you think this is a useful analogy. Imagine you could go back in time. You get in a time machine and you head back to the time before gold was money, before people used, you know, metal coins, and some guy's digging up a bunch of gold and you're like, hey, that's going to be money someday. Like, that's going to be valuable. People are going to use that to exchange value with one another. And he's like, okay, well, how much is it worth? And it's like, I don't know, nothing right now, or just a little bit right now. But like, eventually, if you hold on to that, someday you're going to be able to melt that, create coins, and you're going to have incredible purchasing power. And he's like, I don't know, I think we're going to keep using these seashells or whatever it is that they're using at the time. Well, you tell someone else that, and he's like, oh, wow, this is interesting. I guess maybe I'll hold on to some of this. You know, let's see if you're right. And in the future, suddenly that guy's like the next billion. He's the first billionaire because he's been hoarding gold for a while. We're kind of, in my view, at that early stage of this monetization where it's unclear to the rest of the world why that would be, but that's what's happening. And we're seeing it play out in real time, but it's subtle. It doesn't get the attention on mainstream media that most people are watching. But if you could be that person who's hoarding the gold early and beginning to use it slowly as people are willing to accept it, which, by the way, increases its value more quickly, like that's where we're at with Bitcoin. Is that like, does that resonate, or is that something that you think
people would... I completely agree with you. I mean, at some point, people are going to be having, you know, like dinner stories about this. Can you imagine if we had Bitcoin, you know, back, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago? I mean, these are the conversations that are going to happen, because by then, you know, the mere thought of owning a Bitcoin is going to be so far away that it's unattainable. But you need people to, you know, be informed about this. And of course, you need a little bit of time and an open mind to sit down, listen, learn something new. First of all, understand what money is and why the incentives of something that is no longer controllable by human beings is so powerful.
Yeah, and I think to your point about going back in time, Michael, if I could do that, I would go back to 2008 and I'd join the Bitcoin mailing list. And I'd be mining Bitcoin right alongside Satoshi and Hal Finney, you know? And I think the question we have to ask is, you know, why are all of these large institutions buying Bitcoin? You know, why does BlackRock want to hold so much? Why is Saylor buying so much? And I think that we know that the world is going digital, right? Every payment is going to be digital. It just is yet to be determined, like, which stable coin is going to be the one that everybody uses. But I think that if you have a little Bitcoin, even a small amount, you've already front run most people in the world. I think there's the large majority of Bitcoin holders have like 0.01. I think the largest cohort, it's like 14% of people who have Bitcoin only have about $900 worth. So I think we have to see where the future is going. The future is going to be digital. It's not going to be, you know, bars of gold and silver that we transact with. And Bitcoin is the only alternative to being in a permission surveillance state. You know, it's clear that's where we're heading. We talk about Palantir. It's sort of a dark subject. But if the future is going to be digital, Bitcoin, in my opinion, is the only way to escape it. I just wish I was mining it back in 2009.
Yeah. And Tony, to the point you raise here more broadly, I was telling Greer offline, I have a friend. He's actually a client of the Bitcoin Way now. I literally paid for him to acquire our services because he's one of the only people who has taken interest to the level of, hey, I want to take self-custody. I want to like start accumulating, even if it's slowly. But he's very early on in his journey. And he reached out to me yesterday and he's like, hey, man, like what are like the factors and the variables that affect the price of Bitcoin? And I was like, first of all, man, like you're still thinking about this wrong. Like it doesn't matter. Like it's human psychology, it's Wall Street manipulation, it's supply and demand, it's paper Bitcoin. Like there's so many factors. It's geopolitical tensions and people not understanding that it's digital gold and so much more. But I was like, at the end of the day, like you need to stop. Like you're not accumulating this in the hopes that it goes to $1 million so you can cash out. Like that's not the point. The point is, so that way you have $1 million worth of purchasing power in something that can't be censored. You don't need permission to use anytime, day or night, no bank holidays, that you can carry across borders. Like all of these other things that we talk about, like that's you. Yes, we want it to go to $1 million because that means the purchasing power is increased, but it's not because of some, you know, round number in fiat terms. It's like, I have such a hard time figuring out how to break people out of this mold. And I think you're Greer. I mean, if I were to just throw up my hands a bit, I'd say you're right. Like it takes time. It's, you know, I'm 4 years into my journey and it's so evident to me and it's, but I can't just through osmosis impart what I've learned and how I've changed my mind about so many things onto someone who's just picking this up for the first time.
It's because by default, people assume everything is a scam, right? And so when you come up with something that literally sounds like magical and too good to be true, and somebody's listening to you for the first time, of course, they're going to start automatically thinking, okay, so what's the catch here? What's he not telling me? What am I going to do that's going to get me screwed later on? I'm going to lose my money. That's what initially most folks are thinking. But I have a theory about what's going on, you know, with regards to governments and institutions. And the more I thought about this, like I'm almost 100% sure this is exactly what's going on. And it goes something like this. They understand Bitcoin is unstoppable. They understand that Bitcoin was created to remove their power completely. They know this now. Like, I mean, they've tried to kill it over the last 17 years. It's not worked. So what they're trying to do in order to remain relevant and in control is trying to accumulate as much of it as possible in order to build a world where they dangle all these services to keep as many people as possible still dependent on them, but using Bitcoin this time, right? Because their money is failing, it's going to zero. They've printed it to, you know, to oblivion. That's dead. So what's the next, you know, the next best thing? What's the next upgrade to them remaining in power? Well, this is where, you know, they try to separate, you know, ignorant folks from their coins so that they can build these massive ecosystems. So I'm 100% sure you're going to start seeing these crazy incentives. No taxes on Bitcoin, low interest rates on, you know, legacy products using Bitcoin wrappers. You're going to go see like a whole bunch of Disneyland products based on Bitcoin. But as long as that Bitcoin is still within the custody of these same players, because you have no sovereignty in, you know, in that world. And this is what they're desperately trying to do, right?
Yeah, I think it's game theory playing out, but it only works. The game theory only works if you adopt Bitcoin. And to what you were saying, Michael, I would say, like, to your normie friend, if you knew anybody growing up that had a trust fund, right, they were able to live off of a portion of the dividend from the trust fund. You know, you never touch the principal, you live on the interest. And I would say that a lot of Bitcoiners have the same idea. It's like, get enough Bitcoin so that I can have a secure base. And there's a great chart guy, Smithson With, who I've tried to get on our spaces. And he put out charts that indicate if you can get 4 Bitcoin by 2030, you can deduct $100,000 a year and never have to work again if that's what your expenses are. You know, and by then, of course, expenses could be a lot higher. Maybe you need more Bitcoin than that or less. Who knows? But that was just based on the power curve model for Bitcoin's price. And so I think if we're going to adopt, or if we're going to get more normies to adopt it, it's almost like treat Bitcoin as your future trust fund. Get as much as you possibly can. Bitcoin will go up over time. And then in a future world, you'll be able to deduct small amounts of your Bitcoin holdings to fund your lifestyle. That way, you're not taking out debt, you're not using any other banking services, you're really just transacting in a fraction of Bitcoin, and the purchasing power has grown to the point where you can do that.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way of framing it. And honestly, and this is, again, where I kind of throw my hands up. I'm like, maybe we do need to show those sorts of models for people, you know, who are just getting in. Like, I'm so disinterested. Because at the end of the day, I'm just happy with more self-sovereignty. And I think what you describe, Greer, is a useful orange-pilling tool. My hope, and like what I'm always encouraging people to do, is if you feel like you've gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, you understand the macro case, maybe you understand the moral case for Bitcoin, that's awesome. But if you're not feeling some level of like spite, like part of the reason I opt out at this point is just because I hate all of the systems that enslave us so much that even if it's less convenient for now, even if it's not a perfect solution at the moment, like I'll opt for it. I'll go out of my way to do things that the average person isn't probably going to go do because they don't feel that level of conviction, not just in Bitcoin, but against everything. And yeah. I see that all the time. And so maybe it's just a matter of me not being so damn impatient.
I also will just say real quickly, I think, you know, if you look at, let's just say Congress and their spending level, right? There was a report this week that said $55 trillion has been stolen from the American people through taxes and through overspending, $55 trillion. So if you are like an average American, there's nothing you can say or do to stop that. You are literally powerless. But if you move to a Bitcoin standard, it doesn't matter what the government spends. They're not using your money. They can't tax your Bitcoin. You can hold it in self-custody and it's yours. And that, to me, it's one way to sort of return power to yourself. When you are no longer playing in a system where you have no control, now you are set free from even having to worry about it. And to me, that's the shift that I think makes the dramatic improvement in someone's life. Instead of getting emotional on current events and this politician did that and, you know, this immigrant group stole this many billions of dollars, it's like, just switch over to Bitcoin and none of those problems influence you the way they had previously.
Yeah. Tony, you have any other comment on that? I want to actually show this video that you guys were talking about offline.
Yeah, go ahead and play that. That ties in really nice.
I trust more independent central banks with a democratic mandate than private issuers of Bitcoin, which have a very useful role. But
Bitcoin is a decentralized protocol. There's actually no issuer of it. So that's in the sense that central banks have independence. Bitcoin is even more independent. There's no country or company or individual who controls it in the world. And so, anyway, I think it's a healthy competition because if people can decide which one they trust more, and I think it's actually the greatest accountability mechanism on deficit spending.
So, interestingly enough, Brian Armstrong sounds like a Bitcoin maxi for a moment here at Davos. I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, this is, I'm so skeptical. I tend to always assume like these are conversations that are kind of pre-planned and everything, but he's very publicly calling out a central banker and saying, look, this is why Bitcoin, like you're in competition now. Like you no longer have a monopoly on the issuance of money. You only have a monopoly on the issuance of your money that a lot of us are just saying no to. Tony, I think you found this one interesting too. I mean, first of all, like to what extent do you take Brian seriously when he says stuff like this? Or are you skeptical? But what would be your response to this?
No, look, think what you want of Brian Armstrong and Coinbase and the fact that it's a shitcoin casino. But I think what he's saying here, he really means. What he's saying is spot on. And the fact that this smug piece of shit is replying the way he is now is, 100% signal that they are petrified because they have no incentives to compete against Bitcoin. And so they mock it, they make fun of it, they belittle it, thinking, that people are just going to believe them. His statement is you need private control over money. Like you need thieves like him to ensure that the money is trustworthy, right? Whereas Bitcoin completely obliterates that mold, calls him a liar publicly, and just delivers, removes the possibility of abuse from the hands of these parasites into the hands of the people. And there's nothing they can do about it other than attempt to mock it and belittle it in public, hoping enough people out there believe them. But it's not going to work because Brian Armstrong, again, your opinions aside here, he's a big public figure. So there are people that do listen to him. And I genuinely believe in this moment, he means what he says, because I don't think he's a fan of central bankers. He wouldn't be going to like a WEF summit of that sort saying something like this if he was just like trying to pull a joke, right? So I think he definitely means it. And he was trying to like deliver a point straight to this guy's face, hopefully to shut him up once and for all.
Greer, do you agree?
I was surprised to hear this come out of Brian's mouth. It shows me that he does understand Bitcoin. And then it's contrasted with the fact that you can buy Fartcoin and other shitcoins on his platform. To me, the focus should be on Bitcoin, especially for a company as large as Coinbase. And I think as it relates to banking, it's not surprising to see someone at a European central bank mock and scoff Bitcoin and think that it or not even be able to understand what it is. I'm sorry, you're too late to the game. Bitcoin is way too big and it's way too massive to make it go away. And if I were a bank, I would try to figure out, what are stable coins going to do to our business? We're watching this battle with the Clarity Act where you have Coinbase on one side and other cryptos, and then you have the banking industry. And I think that what they're kind of waking up to is the fact that the competition isn't going away. When Trump said we're going to be the crypto capital of America, I believe it should be the Bitcoin capital, but it shows that the banks are going to have to deal with this. They're not paying out interest to all their customers, but stable coins are. So they see that the revolution of money is coming. And I think that stablecoins will actually usher in a lot more Bitcoin adoption, because between a stablecoin that can be frozen and between Bitcoin itself, those two are incredibly distinct. So, the writing is on the wall for the banking world at large. Stablecoins are your worst enemy and Bitcoin will destroy those as well.
Yeah, there's going to be a very narrow window, though, I think, where you're going to be able to exchange stable coins or your CBDC
yeah.
for Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Like, you're going to have to start earning Bitcoin fast because they're going to shut down those on-ramps as quickly as they can, I think.
You can work at Stake and Shake. They'll pay you 21 cents for every hour in Bitcoin that you work. So if you need a place to go, you know, earn some Bitcoin, that's a good bet.
Did you see Adam Semeca's math on that? It was something like if you work 30 years earning an extra 21 cents in Bitcoin per hour, 40-hour weeks, you could start working at Stake and Shake when you're like 16, and at age 46, you could retire with like $3 million worth of Bitcoin. And that's only assuming like a 20% CAGR for 30 years. So never mind, we're probably going to see, you know, 40, 50, 60% CAGRs in these early years.
But the thing
is, of course, man, that scarcity we've never seen before. Like, holy shit, the amount of purchasing power that thing represents is, you know, it's so surreal. Like, nobody can comprehend it.
Yeah. And you don't even have to work in Stake and Shake. You know, they're paying you 21 cents an hour and you can have, you know, $3 million after 30 years. But you could double that. You could triple that. You could buy a dollar every hour and retire that much sooner. And it doesn't matter where you work. You know, the lesson is just get Bitcoin as often as you can with whatever money you have. And you can't look at it as, you know, is Bitcoin going to $1 million tomorrow? You have to plan out and say, I'm in this thing for 10 years or more, and I won't even think about what my life looks like until after I've been in it for 10 years. You know?
That's the orange pill math that I think we need for people. It's like, look, if you could work at Stake and Shake and save 21 cents an hour for each hour that you work, and in 30 years, you got $3 million worth of Bitcoin. Or like you're probably like many people listening to this are probably in a position where they could save a dollar, a couple of dollars an hour for each hour that they work, you know, lump sum in when they get a commission check or some sort of inheritance cash flow, like whatever it is. And you're only going to massively increase what that Bitcoin purchasing power is worth. And again, it doesn't matter that it's $3 million. That just happens to be the dollar denominated value of the thing that you own. At a particular point in time, to Tony's point, I think I love what you said, Tony, that you don't get paid, you know, $5,000 in dollars and then compare, well, how many, you know, Zimbabwean dollars is this worth? Like no one cares. Like that's I think we're going to reach that point. But again, I think.
Yeah, you want to be holding the ruler of money.
Right.
Right. When you hold Bitcoin, you know, you own all fiat currencies. Like you'll have a million of every single one of them, a billion of some other ones. Like you'll be holding the kingpin of all money, right? That you know no force in this universe can remove from your power unless you give it up. And they can't dilute it from you indirectly either. It's fixed in supply from now to eternity. So, man, it's like the incentives, they speak for themselves. But we just need more people to be aware that this is money. Forget investing in Bitcoin. You're not investing in anything. You're saving.
Yeah, I think we all follow Sani on X, and you know he breaks down how much Bitcoin's available. And I've said this before, but I think about it all the time. There are only 3.3 million Bitcoin that are liquid. You know that could be purchased by the market, whether that's institutions or sailor or retail. So you know 3 million Bitcoin could get scooped up if we have enough awareness, if enough, you know, world events happen where people think I need to get at least a little Bitcoin. You know, there's, you know, 30 million people could only get 0.1. You know, that's not a lot. I think we're often just sort of lured into the fact that we're watching the price and we're not looking at the available supply, which is, you know, it's not a lot. I mean, it wouldn't take a lot for Bitcoin to be, you know, unavailable.
Yeah, the thing is, though, I think more becomes available at higher prices because I think there are a lot of, you know, quote unquote, long-term hodlers.
The FOMO.
Yeah, well, like, I think there are long-term hodlers who, like, we've seen this right now with a lot of OGs who seem to be selling Bitcoin, and probably understandably so, because right now they need dollars to put in a pool, they need dollars to build a house, like, whatever, you know, buy a Ferrari, whatever. I think it makes sense that they'd say, hey, I've got 10,000 Bitcoin. I simply don't need that. I'm going to cash some of it out. I think we're going to see that for at least a decade, you know, people cashing out. I think at some point, I think the big shift, like when people want to know, like, when does it go parabolic in terms of my ability to use and purchase Bitcoin, is when it becomes completely evident to everyone that a day is coming where your only option to go buy your groceries, to purchase a new home, to purchase a new car, is with Bitcoin. And then they realize this was never an investment. I was just accumulating the money that the future needed. And now we're here. Until that day comes, I think people are going to continue to view it as something like an investment. Many people, obviously not us. And I just want to like shake people out of that, you know, that old mindset of accumulation for the sake of exchanging for dollars down the road. But I think,
you know what I say? I think we head towards a world where at some point individuals could be considered as superpowers. You know, it's no longer, you know, limited to nation states. You know, you've got sovereign individuals that are holding, you know, a significant amount of Bitcoin. You know, that makes you, you know, a superpower in and of yourself because of what you could do with all that purchasing power. And so at some point, you know, like somebody who's, let's say, buying Bitcoin today and has, I don't know, like two or three, even that is going to seem like what on earth am I going to do with all of this? I have no use for it. Mm-hmm. And so you'll start seeing like sort of forced redistributions to build, you know, and enhance the world you want to live in. And I genuinely believe we're going to start seeing a lot of this, as insane as it may sound now. At some point, you know, especially if you also don't forget that, you know, we have AI humanoids that are going to be part of our everyday existence, doing a million things for free. And so your use for money, I don't know, man, if it's going to be as, you know, as big as it is now. I don't think so.
Yeah, I kind of to dovetail with what you're saying, Tony, I was doing a Grok search maybe a month ago, and I asked Grok, considering the amount of Bitcoin that's available, and then also look at all of the new entrants into the space. So just take the big ones, BlackRock, Fidelity, Sailor. If the pace that they acquire Bitcoin continues, how long until the Bitcoin that's available is gone? And Grok was putting out hypothetical scenarios, which is like July 2029, you know, July or September 2030. All the Bitcoin will be purchased. And of course, as we get closer to less and less Bitcoin, the price would go up. So it gets harder and harder to purchase, you know, larger amounts of it. But even just doing an AI search, just using like the pace of acquisition, which, you know, for the ETFs, it's like 1.2 or 1.3 million over the last 3 years, 2 years. So we are going to hit a point where there's a wall where Bitcoin's so expensive that only the largest entities can purchase it. And to me, it's like, you know, you really want to start getting some before we approach that.
I completely agree with that. And Greer, just so you know, man, it's going to be so easy for people to keep receipts on you. And in 2028, 2029 to check back and see, was Greer right? So yeah,
that's fine. I'll be able to afford facial surgery at that point. And then I can just become a NIM and disappear into the ether.
A cyborg.
Well, no, I'm not going to be cybernetic. I'll move out to the woods.
My understanding is the big change is you can become a woman. So that's the trend these days.
Well, I'm anti following the crowd, so I won't be doing that.
Good for you, man. Guys, I think the one we got to wrap up here. I think the place to leave this off is everything we've discussed today, I think is interesting. Hopefully it's informative for people, for everyone listening. The key is you have to take self-custody. Like, I don't think any of this stuff matters. Like the future purchasing power, if it is controlled by a third party, if they've got your keys, if they know who it is, when you move it, how much you have, all of that stuff. I think a lot of this, like what we talk about is what matters, completely goes out the window. So take self-custody, start stacking sats, even if it's 21 cents an hour, 40 hours a week for the next 30 years, like do what you can. I don't think you're going to regret it. Not financial advice either, though, of course. But Tony, great tweet, man. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. And I think this was a fun conversation.
My pleasure, guys. Just remember, Bitcoin is savings and the investment that you're making is in your future.
Yes, that's well said. All righty, guys. Good chatting for everyone who tuned in. Thank you so much. Stick around for another minute. Learn about the Bitcoin way. And we'll catch up again soon, gents.
Thanks.
Cheers. Hey there, thank you for tuning into Bitcoin Banter. Wanted to take a quick minute to remind you to head on over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. It is critical that you take full control of your wealth and we can equip you with the skills needed to take 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. For our existing clients, we also offer our Bitcoin Bootcamp, where we will conduct quarterly calls with you to reinforce the training we've provided and fill any gaps in your knowledge. While you're at it, ask about our solo mining service, something we think everybody should be doing. We also help with addressing your personal and online cybersecurity, and we can even help you set up a privacy phone free of big tech and Big Brother surveillance. Don't underestimate the amount of tracking taking place in your browser and in the apps you use every day. And finally, whether you're ready to make a move to a freedom-loving paradise or want a backup in the event of a worst-case scenario, be sure to ask about our Plan B residency program. Being untethered from a single location is one of the best ways to ensure your self-sovereignty into the future. Again, you can schedule a free consultation at thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you are enjoying the show, please do me a favor, subscribe to our channel wherever you listen, give us a 5-star review, and drop us a comment. We would really appreciate it, and it makes it easier for others to begin finding us as we preach the gospel of financial self-sovereignty and beyond. Thank you again for listening. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.